Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
All righty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 24th of August, 2021. Tuesday. Happy Tuesday to you, and happy birthday to my dad, even though he doesn't listen to this podcast because he doesn't have internet, and he has a flip phone, like, that you add minutes to, not even a touchscreen phone. Still, a happy birthday to my father. Just send it out there in the ether. Some people listen to it who know my dad, so it's my dad's birthday. Give him a call. Love you, Dad. All right, action-packed program, as always. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com. Thank you for those emails. Keep them coming if you want. Rating and reviewing on iTunes, always something for which I am eternally grateful. Sharing on social media, I'm probably even more grateful than that. Threatening the physical well-being of people to get them to subscribe, I legally am not allowed to say that I am grateful for that. But wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know what I mean? Say no more. Ah, yes. Don't forget about the Curse Program, the Week in Evan Review, at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. I think I'm going to post a picture of the kids up there. So for patrons, you get to see that kind of stuff. I'm going to start using that a heck of a lot more. So patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. Thank you for that support. And this last one was just angry. It was just angry. Less funny. But it'll be more funny going into the future as President Dementia screws up everything. You gotta laugh. You gotta laugh no matter how sad it is. Now let me tell you about something that can help you with things when they hurt. They hurt. Maybe not emotionally, but physically. And that is CBD oil from AncientLifeOil.com. You go to AncientLifeOil.com, all one word. They're having a great big sale there for the month of August. You check it out. You throw everything in your cart. You go. I mean, it's the best CBD oil, 100% organic. Pure, non-GMO, none of the fake stuff. Who knows if you're getting like vegetable oil they're pretending is CBD oil? You just don't know. Well, this stuff is certified, so you do know. You enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of everything else, and you help the program. More importantly, you help yourself. AncientLifeOil.com, promo code Derek. Oh, man. It's just one of those days, man. We're going to get to all the news we can. First, I was watching something on Vice caught my eye last night. I don't watch Vice very often, ever, really. But it was they had a series called The Dark Side of the 90s. Now, I lived through the 90s. I assume you did, or shortly thereafter, and not that far removed from it. And then Dark Side of the 90s. So it's like, ooh, this one's on Sub Pop, the grunge label out there in Seattle that brought us Nirvana and Mudhoney, one of my personal favorites, and all sorts of other groups out there. And so I watched, I caught the last half hour of it, and I thought, what do you mean the dark side? There was no dark side, unless you consider capitalism to be a dark side, because it was about how Sub Pop became wildly successful, and yeah, there were Kurt Cobain's suicide. I remember where I was when that happened. And there were, in the decade or shortly after, there were a couple of other heroin overdoses. And you're like, okay, that's pretty dark. But it was literally like 2 minutes worth of the documentary. Most of it was about how Sub Pop started off as a small label and then became a wildly successful label and then kind of screwed up and then got its act together again. And I'm like, how is that the dark side? And then it hit me. Oh, it's because they don't like capitalism over their advice. That explains how they've managed to raise, hundreds of millions of dollars, have like a $1 billion valuation, and still not even come close to remotely turning a profit. So the dark side of the 90s is that Vice was started then, and somewhere along the line, they became lunatics who love getting money, don't want you to get any money, and can't manage their money at all. I can see that as being a dark view of the world. Anyway, it was interesting just to see the, be reminded of things that you lived through. But other than that, they had different dark sides of the 90s for other things. And that wasn't, didn't really seem super dark. It just seems things that leftists don't like now. But that's kind of how the left manages to win in the culture war. Just take a look at, if you have Netflix, I don't know about the other ones, but if you have Netflix, if you just look at the documentaries on Netflix, any of them, it's, there's We're All Gonna Die from Hunger, We're All Gonna Die from Climate Change, Gays Are the Only, It's the Only Way to Live Is Gay, this, that, and the other. And just, I couldn't care less how somebody lives their life, but my God, spare me the documentary about how wonderful this, that, and the other thing is. But that's how, and you think, who makes this documentary? Because some of these things have high production budgets. They're produced by Netflix. They're produced by big Hollywood muckety-mucks. They're produced by the Obamas. They're produced by leftist billionaires. And you go, oh, that's how they're winning the culture war. That's just a quick note on this, because nobody ever makes one of these documentaries and thinks, well, this is going to be a cash cow. I'm going to really see a return on the investment about cow farts and how if we don't become vegetarians, the whole planet's going to go to hell. Nobody's going to make a return on that investment. But for people who are unsuspecting, and you name it the right thing and you package it the right way and you write the right description, somebody unsuspecting will start watching it, and it's all left-wing propaganda, and you go, oh, this must be true. They do it for historical events, recent historical events, too. There are a lot of stuff there about the Trump administration that is complete garbage. But it's well-packaged, well-produced, and it will become the narrative for people who don't pay attention to politics if the right doesn't get off their butts and do something about it. Meaning they produce alternate content. The truth. Maybe produce some documentaries that don't suck, that aren't boring as hell to watch, that don't put the audience to sleep, that aren't just people being interviewed while B-roll plays, and it's just so on the nose that it's awful and terrible to watch. I don't know why that occurred to me just now, but it did. And I really wish that conservatives, there are conservatives in Hollywood, and there are conservatives with a lot of money. How about some of you come together, you've been in the entertainment industry. I mean, for God's sakes, I could produce a better documentary than conservatives generally belch out. So let's get on the ball, guys. We're losing the future because the past is being rewritten by people who hate this country. Maybe some people who love this country should try, and maybe don't think of it as, if I don't get my money, how do I get my money back on this project? No, you don't get your money back. You get your money back in this project in the good feelings you get from helping shape the narrative and unpollute minds in the future. Just a thought. Anyway, on with the show. I want to start off, we've got a lot of Afghanistan stuff to get to, but I want to start off with the vaccines, because a lot of people, and your choice is your choice, but a lot of people were saying about the vaccines, well, they're not approved by the FDA. They're rushed. It's emergency use authorization. And it was true, but it's not true anymore. Now the Food and Drug Administration has given approval, full approval, to the Pfizer BioNTech, I think, vaccine. And I'm curious if that's going to make a difference. I suspect it will make a difference for some people. There simply will be a difference for some people. And other people, there is no difference to be made whatsoever. It doesn't really matter what they say, what they do, what they want, where they come from. They're never going to get this shot. And there are other people who are, I don't know what they're waiting for. There are other people who've got natural antibodies, and that's fine. And my problem with all of this is you can find anything you want to find out there, quite frankly. No matter which side of it you're on, if you want to find something that reinforces what you believe, you can find it. And that'll just steal your resolve. Okay, you can steal your resolve. But what do you do from there? Do you ever learn if all you ever expose yourself to is the opinions of people who agree with you? And I don't think that's the case. especially on something like this, because most people, frankly, aren't medical doctors. Most people are not. Thank God. You imagine having to hang out with doctors all the time. If everybody was a doctor, be terrible. The few doctors I know, like some, they're all fine people, but I'd feel sorry for them because everybody's like, you know, it hurts when I move my shoulder like this, doc. Like, we're trying to have dinner here. Can you just give it a rest? But with the FDA approval, that gives it more of a sense of legitimacy, doesn't it? Will this move anybody? Or is there a particular vaccine you're waiting for? You know, there are a lot of things in development. Some things are approved overseas and other things haven't been approved here. Everybody can find their favorite and their best ideas. And, you know, I'd like the, ultimately, I would have preferred to get the Novavax one. But they keep pushing back and pushing back and pushing back on when they're even going to submit for emergency use authorization. Now they're saying the fourth quarter of this year, which could be as late as, you know, the end of December. And then who knows? They've already pushed it back before. Why are they pushing it back? I'd like to know, but I suppose they really can't say, because who knows? It could, you know, screw up the situation. It could make it really awkward. They can't say and make there are all sorts of legal things. They're a publicly traded company. If they come out and say, we got a great vaccine, we got a great vaccine, and then their stock goes up, people sell stock, people buy stock, and then, oh, wait, our vaccine isn't so great, it doesn't work, its efficacy rate isn't 90%, it's 20%, if that, which is a rounding error in, you know, just, it's no different than nature, then they would be subject to suit. I mean, for God's sakes, the FEC, or not the FEC, the FCC, no, whatever, the stock people. SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. We have way too many organizations in this country. The Securities and Exchange Commission has gone after Elon Musk for tweets he sent. They went after him for getting stoned on Joe Rogan's podcast and saying stuff. So they're sitting out there, the government, there are government agencies that exist to find ways to go after you. So you're just sitting there and you're like, I can't say anything. If you're the CEO of a company, I thought about trying to interview the CEO of Novavax, but I'm not sure what good it would do because there's so much they can't say. I mean, they'd probably agree to do it because they do press, and he'd be very lawyerly and very specific, I'd imagine. I don't know this for sure, in their answers. So there's not really a whole lot of point in trying to get answers out of somebody. They don't even know when they're going to submit to the FDA. Again, good Lord, how many, it's like the show so far has been a spilled bowl of SpaghettiO letters. But it's one of those situations where, like, your vaccine, you hear stories about vaccines, you hear pluses about vaccines. Okay, the FDA has approved the Pfizer vaccine, yet all the stories I'm seeing are that the Moderna vaccine is significantly more effective against the Delta variant than the Pfizer vaccine. Is that 100% true? I have no idea. Again, I'm not a doctor, but from the stories I've seen, from the studies that have been allegedly done, but then again, you're looking at a situation where the studies, real studies, take a long time to do. They take a long time to conduct and run through all the data. Have somebody else look at it. It has to be peer reviewed. So are these things accurate? We have no idea. All you can go on is your gut and your best guess. So where do you go from here? What do you do? I don't know if the FDA's approval of Pfizer is going to make that much of a difference, mostly because of the blown credibility, not because of Pfizer, not because of anything that Pfizer or BioNTech did, but because of the so-called experts, the people in the positions of power. It's a lot like you look at government and you have to really sit back and think to yourself, what do they do well? It's a legitimate question. It'll get you called a right winger on MSNBC, but it is a legitimate and important question. What do they do well? They had all this stimulus money during the Trump administration, during the Biden administration. It's still the same bureaucrats in there. No matter who's the captain of the ship, the people, you know, oiling the gears are the same people. They don't go anywhere. I wish they would, but they don't go anywhere. Ideally, the government wouldn't be that big, and they wouldn't be that many people oiling the gears, and they wouldn't be doing all of these things, and it wouldn't be spending this much money, and you'd be able to keep track of it. A government that spent maybe $1 trillion a year, still a ton of money, could probably do a lot better job of tracking that money and making sure it isn't wasted or ripped off than a government spending $4.5 trillion. And then a couple of trillion dollars here and a couple of trillion dollars there on top of it in so-called emergency spending. We've seen stories where, you know, inmates in California prison, inmates in all across the country have been collecting stimulus money, have been collecting, you know, PPP loans, have been getting all sorts of emergency money that was supposed to be for people not in prison. And you sit there and you go, well, how could this happen? And it's because the government is so damn big. It's because the government does so much. So can you trust this government on anything? I understand the inclination to not want to trust this government on anything. It's the, you know, the jack of all trades and master of none. Maybe if we had a government the size that it's supposed to be as prescribed by the Constitution, we wouldn't have a government like that. We wouldn't have lifelong bureaucrats like Fauci out there, because with a smaller government, you could be more selective in who you put in charge. And if the guy in charge we find out that he's been on every side of every issue, in addition to funding gain-of-function research at the Wuhan laboratory in China and all the other things we've learned about President Fauci, he would be gone. Be easy to get him gone. But we don't have that kind of government. So while a lot of people will look at the FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine, I don't even know if you can call it a vaccine at this point. It's more of an immunity enhancer. Seems to be temporary. Seems to go away. Plus the variant. People are, by the way, one of the conspiracy theories I've seen about the vaccines and variants are that the vaccines are causing the variants and therefore prolonging the problem and prolonging the pandemic. And, you know, if we didn't have the vaccines, we wouldn't have had these mutations and then we wouldn't have this problem. If we just get herd immunity by not taking vaccines and let it run through the population. I don't believe that to be true, largely because the variants are occurring in places where there is heavy transmission, in third world countries where there is really no vaccinations, right? And that's kind of the thing. India is where the Delta variant comes. We used to call it the Indian variant, but then everybody said, no, that's racist, and now they just give it Greek letters. But the Delta variant emerged in India. India is one of the most densely populated areas on the planet. It's not exactly known for hygiene. And they had a lot of people a while ago being impacted. What I want to know is how the hell it got here. If it emerged in India, how did it get here? You can't really travel all that well unless you're a celebrity or a politician. Did one of them bring it back, or did it march across the southern border? But the idea that vaccines are causing the virus to mutate doesn't really hold water with me, because they're not mutating. We are Israel, for example. There is no Israeli variant. Israel is having an issue with the Delta variant. So far, it's, you know, people are getting the virus. Some people are getting mild symptoms, but it's the most heavily vaccinated country on the planet. So they're not experiencing massive crushes of anything, which is good. There have been some people who've died, but very, very few. But if the vaccines caused variants, you would think it would make sense that variants would then be emerging from the most vaccinated country on the planet rather than the least vaccinated countries on the planet. Because in order for a virus to mutate, it has to be infecting people. Vaccine or viruses just mutate over time. Hopefully, this one will become less and less dangerous, and we're kind of seeing that. There are people, you know, they say that the Delta variant is much more transmissible than the original, and you can see that as evidenced by the number of cases around the country and around the world. But particularly, I mean, we live in the United States. We are concerned with the United States. There are cases on the rise. Hawaii's numbers are through the roof. Hawaii's hospitalizations are setting an all-time high. Hawaii is an island. Hawaii is the most vaccinated state, I believe. But that doesn't mean everybody's vaccinated. We still know that the vast majority of people who have an issue with the Delta variant are the unvaccinated. So the virus simply mutates. That's what they do. Just like if you look at it, I'm looking at my bottle of Purell sitting on my desk here. Kills 99.99% of germs, viruses, blah, blah, blah. And you rub it all over your hands, and you should. You should wash your hands regularly. That's one of the things that we learned and that will help in this situation, for which there against which there is no question. There's no doubt. Nobody's going, well, no, the more you wash your hands, the worse it gets. But the 99.99%, that leaves 0.001%. It's not, you know, there's just one or two viruses out there in the whole, you know, world of viruses. It is, you got, say you got 1,000 COVID viruses on your hands, and you rub the Purell on it. Now, odds are it'll kill all of them, but there's a possibility that it will leave 0.001% of them out there. They're a little bit different. Twins are different. That one then gets into somebody, and it reproduces. That could cause a variant. The reason there are so many variants of this virus is not because it's a particularly nasty virus or a particularly evil virus or even that it was manufactured. The coronavirus family has been around forever. It's because this has never infected human beings before. I guarantee you it has been mutating throughout the bat community in rural China ever since it was created. But it gets into human beings and it mutates. The longer it will be in human beings, the less it will mutate, which many of them will die off of these variants. It's just a matter of, I hope, it dies off before we die off. So it's a whole messed up situation that I think this all could have been made better. Look, there are some people who are never going to get anything, no matter what. There are some people, there's a show, for God's sakes, called My 600-Pound Life. Nobody questions that being 600 pounds or 800 pounds or whatever is not a good thing for you. People do things all the time. They're individuals. There's 7 billion people on the planet. Nobody is unique, but there is no one thing for everybody. Go to a mall on a Saturday and you see people in spandex who should not be wearing spandex. Just because it says one size fits all doesn't make it so. But we have to deal with something. We have to deal with the situation at hand. The people who are dying are the unvaccinated, by and large. The other people who are vaccinated who are dying are the people with serious health issues that suppress their immunity. I wish we had a government that had been leveling with us the whole time, honestly, the so-called experts in government, so that when the FDA approval comes in, we might not have had a whole bunch of people going, well, I still don't care. I can't trust these people because I can't look at anybody in the face and go, you absolutely can trust Dr. Fauci, because I don't think you can trust Dr. Fauci. And that's sad. He shouldn't have a job. Same for Rochelle Walensky. You can't trust them. It's not paranoia. It's not some conspiracy theory to say that. It's the truth. And it's based on what they've said and what they continue to say. And that's a problem when you put these people in charge. The one thing that the FDA approval for the Pfizer vaccine does do is now gives the Biden administration the ability to start making mandates. It's no longer experimental. It's no longer emergency use only. And the military is going first. They've announced that they're going to require the vaccine of all military personnel. It is it's a bold move. New York City has decided that they're going to go and require every employee of their school system to be vaccinated. People are going back to school today. I don't know why. When I was a kid, we went back to school the Thursday after Labor Day. It was always the Thursday after Labor Day. This going back in the middle of summer, it's still summer. It's going to be in the 90s this week. It was something unheard of. It was the Thursday after Labor Day was a half day. Then it was the Friday where you didn't really do much. And then really the school started the following Monday. But you had to start getting back into the swing of things, waking up and getting to the bus stop and everything. And now it's August. It's really the middle of August. And they're going, meh, we're going to just go ahead and send you back to school now. Mask up, kids. Well, now the employees of the New York City school system are going to be required to get vaccinated. And it might start there, but it ain't going to end there. No way, no how. Now I want to shift gears to what's going on in Afghanistan. As we are watching the situation just rapidly deteriorate more and more. There was a sniper apparently this morning, or the last night over there. It is really amazing how poorly planned or thought out or even considered this whole disaster on behalf of the Biden administration has been. Here's just a tiny piece, allegedly, that what we left over there. Why we left this much stuff, I don't know. Why we did, it's a question only Joe Biden could answer. And it's probably a decision Joe Biden can't remember. 75,000 war vehicles, 75,000, including light and medium tactical vehicles, Humvees, mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles, and armored personnel carriers. Yeah. The mine vehicles, the 1,000 mine-resistant vehicles, cost upwards of $767,000 each, allegedly. Let that sink in. 208 airplanes and helicopters, including 20 A-29 Super Tucano attack aircraft. The A-29s cost $21.3 billion each. Black Hawk helicopters were also captured, costing up to $21 million each. What do you mean up to? Is it like depending on which package you get? We want the leather interior. I think that's the way to go. 600,000 rifles, machine guns, shotguns, and howitzers were transferred to the Afghan security forces. And 25,000 grenade launchers and 2,500 howitzers, the modern-day cannon. All left behind. Once the Afghan military started collapsing, once the Afghan military started running away, refusing to fight, or whatever it was they did, why at that point did not the President of the United States say, okay, we've got troops there, we've got to get more troops in there, and we're going to go and collect all of these things and destroy them, collect them, get them out, whatever it is. I don't care if you get them out of there, I'd prefer you bring them out. But if you can't bring them out, you destroy them. It's pretty simple. We destroyed one of the helicopters in the Bin Laden raid, remember? Because it crashed. Why is that not operable under these circumstances? The same concept. Go and destroy this stuff. So stupid. But Joe Biden is seemingly oblivious. On Friday, he did a press conference. On Sunday, he kind of had a mini press availability. He's kind of on vacation. But on Friday, he said something that even liberal news outlets had to admit was not factually accurate. Talking about, you know, his plan is basically get to the airport and we'll get you out. Americans, American allies, anybody we're getting out, get to the airport and we'll get you out. Which is kind of stupid, quite frankly, because people can't get to the airport. See, what you see on the news and what apparently the president hears and only hears about is that there are checkpoints outside the airport, ringing the airport at the gates of the airport, where the Taliban is not letting people through, not letting a lot of people through. Some checkpoints, depending on who's working them, aren't letting anybody through. Okay. We can see that. And allegedly, we control one or two of the gates. And so, you know, they can get in there, supposedly, allegedly, although they shut down again today because of violence. The problem is that the Taliban set up checkpoints all throughout Kabul, not just ringing the airport. So while you can look over the fence and say, hey, they're not letting that person through, that's a problem, and get them maybe to let them through, you can't do that if you're 2 miles away, stopped randomly at a checkpoint by some fanatical Taliban person. Doesn't matter if you've got your American passport. It's almost as if these savages do not respect international law or even the deals that they allegedly cut. But Joe Biden, now we're hearing stories about people being stopped, people being prevented from getting to the airport all across the city. Joe Biden apparently hasn't heard of any of these. Listen to him talk about it.
Military has secured the airport, as you mentioned, but will you sign off on sending U.S. troops into Kabul to evacuate Americans who haven't been able to get to the airport safely?
We have no indication that they haven't been able to get in Kabul through the airport. We've made an agreement with the Taliban thus far. They've allowed them to go through. It's in their interest for them to go through. So we know of no circumstance where American citizens are carrying an American passport or trying to get through to the airport. But we will do whatever needs to be done to see to it they get to the airport.
Wait, oh, no, that's not a problem. Man, no, you're crazy. You're wrong. That doesn't happen. Now we go to CNN. In the immediate aftermath of that, CNN of all places, their reporter, now they sugarcoat it a little bit, but their reporter says, no, that's not true.
The president has said American passport holders are not having any trouble getting past the Taliban checkpoints. That may be problematic. An awful lot of reports that is still very much a problem.
That may be problematic. See, that might be wrong. He is wrong. It's that might be problematic. NBC News, their foreign correspondent Richard Engel didn't have a problem with the diplomatic nature of his language. He calls it a mess that it is. Listen, it's a little bit long, but listen to NBC News to report on this very statement.
So President Biden just described a very orderly process, an American airlift that is going efficiently, that there's a negotiation with the Taliban, that it may be difficult, but Afghans can get to the airport and then get on these flights and then come to places like Doha. It is far more chaotic than that. There are Taliban checkpoints all across the city. Some of them are more aggressive. Some of them are less aggressive. But it is extremely difficult, extremely dangerous for people to get to the airport. Then once they get to the airport, they have to be let in one of the gates. And the Americans who are on the other side of those gates don't know who exactly they're going to let in, and they're afraid to open the gates because there could be a rush of people coming in. Once they get inside the gates, they have to be processed. Sometimes the people on the base, the Afghans there, will start to rush Americans on the base because they're afraid that they're being stopped. Then they get on flights. The flights can take 12 hours of just waiting or longer. Then they get here, they wait here, and they have, or they go to other countries, and then they get processed. So it is a much more complicated airlift. It is now a humanitarian airlift, more of a refugee extraction than just a simple extraction of American personnel, American citizens, and people who worked with the United States.
They have no idea. The White House apparently has no idea the real situation on the ground. Now, that was NBC News. Richard Engel. The first report was CNN. She was in a studio in Washington, D.C. The next one was, that was NBC News' Richard Engel. He was in Dubai, where some of the planes were landing. So we're getting closer. This is ABC News. This is their foreign correspondent, a guy named Ian Pannell. He is in Kabul. He is a little bit more, forthright in his language.
She asked about Americans and Afghans who are in Kabul and beyond, who are trying to get to that airport. But as you have reported for many nights on World News Tonight, the Taliban controls the checkpoint, the Taliban and convoys around that country. How do you get those families to the airport? The president said he has no intelligence that Americans have been unable to get there. The question, obviously, does that square with reporting on the ground?
I mean, just totally not. I mean, the reaction was pretty much one of, I mean, it was breathtaking. No indication Americans can't get to the airport. I mean, last night on World News, we had American citizens who had exactly that experience. They tried to get to the airport. They had waived their American passports. The president talked about all they had to do was present their passports and they'd be allowed through. They were beaten by the Taliban with the rubber fan belt from a vehicle. Multiple examples of Americans and Afghans, SIV applicants, who have now tried repeatedly. There's one woman we're tracking. She's back at the airport tonight. This is her third night in the row. Gates haven't opened. The Taliban haven't let her through. It just seems the reality and the rhetoric are miles apart.
You see, does that sound like Joe Biden is particularly well-informed or honest? He gave us his word. He's a Biden, though. Yeah, well, how'd that work out for you? It really is amazing. The disconnect. Now, I don't know how long this honest reporting will continue on behalf of these leftist outlets. But right now, it seems to be there for the most part. They'll find a way to blame Donald Trump in this one. But it's absolutely amazing. We've got people on the ground. The closer they are to the ground, the more they have to say about this, and the more they have to say about how screwed up this whole thing is. This is not how things should work. This is not what's going on. And they're sitting there going, there's Joe doddering, crocheting in the corner, going, yeah, all is well. All is well. Now, over at the Pentagon, there's a lot of talk about how many people are getting out. The Pentagon's in charge of getting people out. They don't want to, they're not wanting to say how many Americans are getting out. And there's a reason for that, because on Friday they did mention how many Americans, roughly, they got out. They ballparked it, and that's all you're going to get out of them. And if you listen to this next cut, you're going to notice the total number of people evacuated, and then they give a, you know, what of those total number, what of that total number are Americans? And you have to sit there and you go, what, why is there so few? Listen to it.
The airport remains secure. Evacuation flights are steadily increasing, and we are doing everything we can to maximize safe evacuations. In the past 24 hours, 15 C-17s arrived with several hundred more troops that allowed us to get to that 5,800 number and also some supplies. As of 0300 Eastern EDT today, this morning, and for the previous 24 hours, 16 C-17s and one C-130 departed Kabul. These flights contain nearly 6,000 passengers, including a couple hundred American citizens.
6,000 passengers they have evacuated, including a couple hundred Americans. A couple hundred Americans? 6,000 people should not Americans, and I'm not saying this because I think that the Afghan allies or the British nationals or whomever else we're flying out of there can go to hell or anything, but should not Americans be a priority? Get them all, but first and foremost, you want to get the Americans out, right? Please, that seems to be what I would think the president of the United States' duty would be, but apparently I'm wrong on that one. A couple of hundred Americans, a very small percentage. Now, after that, the next day or the next Pentagon briefing, retired Admiral John Kirby is the Pentagon spokesmodel. He was the Pentagon spokesmodel under Obama. Now he's back in that job under Biden because this is just Obama, you know, administration three. John Kirby now refuses to give even estimates, even a ballpark as to how many Americans. He just says a lot. He doesn't say a lot. I don't want to spoil what he does say. But he will not give numbers of Americans now. Instead of, you know, 6,000 people, including a couple hundred of Americans, you're not getting even that much. You're getting vaguer and vaguer and vaguer because these numbers make this administration look bad.
John, were you being deliberately vague when you said the number of Americans was several thousand, or was it because you're not sure of the number? If you need to check the number, I mean, that's the most important number here, the number of Americans. So if it's just a matter of checking the number, can you do that and give it to us? Or if you're being deliberately vague, tell me why you're being deliberately vague.
I think I'm just going to leave it at several thousand right now, Dave.
Well, then tell us why.
Because I think the number is very fluid, and it literally changes nearly by the hour.
It's not more fluid than these 11,000, 37,000.
I'm going to leave it several thousand right now.
it's just several thousand. Well, okay, so total, several thousand out of how many? Several thousand. So you're done? No, we still have several thousand to go. Why, thank you, John Kirby. That is wonderful information. Now I feel much more enlightened and informed having heard you talk. Several thousand. Well, what constitutes several thousand? John Kirby has not exactly established himself as a truth teller. So are we to believe is several thousand? Is there any way to verify that? Do you actually know, Admiral Kirby? And when he says, well, this is a fluid situation, it's not that fluid. It's fluid in the extent that the number should keep increasing, right? That's the kind of fluid that it is. It shouldn't be fluid in the sense that, you know, it could ebb and flow. You know, we could say it was 5,000 one day, and then it's really back down to 2,000 because 3,000 somehow snuck back in or hijacked a plane and decided I want to go back to Afghanistan, and then maybe we get up to 4,000 the next day, and then it's really only down to 1,500 the following day. No, that's not how this works. It's fluid in that it changes the number, theoretically should change, but it should always go in the same direction. So you're not going to immediately be called a liar by the press, Admiral Kirby, if you say, we got 3,000 Americans out today, and then, you know, an hour later, a plane lands with 200 more Americans, and they're going to come out and say, see, you're a liar. You said 3,000, now it's 3,200. No. No, it's something they don't want you to know. Why they don't want you to know it is up in the air. But it's, make no mistake about it, it's something they don't want you to know. And they wouldn't deny we, the American people, this information if the numbers were good. If it was, well, they thought we had 15,000 in the country and we figured we could get out 3,000 this week, and it turns out we got 7,000 out this week. They would be screaming that from the mountaintops. They wouldn't be coy about that. They do not and are not shy about things that they believe can be spun to their advantage. They are only shy and evasive about things that they know can't, that can be used against them. It ain't by accident, ladies and gentlemen. You could really only screw up the situation in Afghanistan the way the Biden administration did because of not being held to account. There are consequences. There's no reason to really get nervous about something you're doing if there's nobody there going to hold you to account. They've gotten this far. They had the entire election. They've had the entire Biden administration. They only had the 4 years of the Trump administration where Democrats were not held accountable for anything. So, like, you get used to that. You get sloppy when you do that. You think, well, even if we screw up, then what are they going to do? What are they going to do, report on it? I mean, come on. We're not Republicans, right? Give me a break. And then you've got people like this in charge, Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris is in Vietnam. I don't know if she's there studying how to really botch or go to apologize to the Vietnamese. Say, sorry, we took away the crown as the worst evac from a country ever. We've now taken that crown. We're here to collect the crown. We're going to throw it over to Afghanistan or not. But this is her this morning getting off a plane. And so you hear the plane in the background as she approaches reporters. Listen to her cackle. Listen to her laugh about this question. She's just is there anything funny about this? And then her answer gets, well, actually kind of laughable, ironically enough.
What's your response to reports of Americans?
Hold on, everybody. I want to talk about two things. First, Afghanistan. We couldn't have a higher priority right now. And in particular, our priority is making sure that we safely evacuate American citizens, Afghans who worked with us, Afghans at risk, including women and children. And that is one of our highest, if not the highest priority right now.
Okay, you listed three different things. Which one is the actual priority, Kamala? Is it the Americans? Is it the Afghans who work with Americans? Or is it Afghans at risk, which are all women and children? And I would add in young boys, because that's how the Taliban rolls. Honey, you can't have all three as the top priority. And if it's the top priority with the administration, why are you in Asia? What are you doing in a trade mission to Asia? The number one priority, we're all focused on that all week. Well, okay, you're about to meet with the president of Vietnam. You just put him on notice that said, you know what, we're done. I don't care what you have to say. You're not even top 10 of our priorities, but I'm here because we had plans. I know that you'd already made the restaurant reservations and I don't want to cancel lunch. So top priority. You remember all of the flack that the left gave George W. Bush when he was golfing and they come running up, and I forget what the circumstances were, but it was something to do with Osama bin Laden or somebody in Al-Qaeda. And George W. Bush is at the golf course, and he comes over and he gives him a statement. He says, now you know, we're going to do this, that, and the other thing. And now watch this drive. And he goes up and he drives. And Michael Moore put that on a loop in his stupid movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, and it was always like, oh, George W. Bush says they care, they're not going to stop, they're not going to do this, and they're going to hunt him down or wherever they are, and now he's going golfing. Where is that outrage? Kamala Harris, this is our top priority. Now I've got to go talk to Vietnam about maybe getting some stuff in a new trade agreement. I'm not saying everything has to be put on hold. No way, no shape or form at all. The government's business always goes on and somebody has to conduct it. But spare me with this virtue signaling of we are in charge. We are on this. This is all we care about. It's like we will not reject Barack Obama. Barack Obama, when it wasn't Daniel Pearl, it was somebody else, was beheaded. James Foley was beheaded and he was at the golf course. I think I said last week that it was Danny Pearl. It wasn't. It was James Foley. He will not rest until we get justice, whatever. And then 5 minutes later, he was golfing. I get it. Golf can be stressful, but it's not inherently stressful. You know, you slice, you get pretty mad. You miss a putt, you get pretty mad. It's a different kind of stress. But in general, people don't go golfing so they can get stressed out. They go so they can get some rest, some respite from some stress. I don't begrudge a president golfing, but I begrudge anybody telling you that we'll do everything we can in our power, and I personally will not rest until we get X, Y, and Z. Now I'm going to go take a nap. It reminds me of that scene. It's a great scene from The Naked Gun when Nordberg, the character played by O.J. Simpson, he's been blown up or whatever. He's in the hospital in a full body cast. And there's Frank Drebin, and I can't remember, George Kennedy played his character's name. But they're sitting there in the hospital room talking to Nordberg's wife, and she's upset, and he goes, listen, Mrs. Nordberg, I guarantee you that not a single member of this police force will rest until we find and bring this person who did this to Nordberg to justice. We'll do that, blah, blah, blah. And then Leslie Nielsen turns to George Kennedy and says, how about we go grab a bite to eat? That's how government works. That's how all of these people work. They will not rest until they, you know, after their nap, they're totally not going to rest again until night. Comforting? I don't think so. I want to play one more Afghan-related clip for you just to give you the fuller picture. I like to give you the full picture here on the program. This is Joe Biden from April. Just so there's no confusion, talking about what will not happen in his planned withdrawal from Afghanistan.
We'll not conduct a hasty rush to the exit. We'll do it responsibly, deliberately, and safely.
Yeah, how'd that work out, Joe? I can't remember. I don't think it's too good. I don't. Speaking of not too good, I've got to get an update in here before we run out of time on Australia. They are on lockdown, super lockdown, double lockdown. Even New Zealand they're expanding their lockdowns. It's supposed to be 3 days. Now they're expanding it because more and more cases are popping up. How? I don't know, but whatever. In Australia, just to show you again from the files of just because they speak our language doesn't mean they're anything like us at all. I want you to listen to this report, not only from the casual nature of the report itself and how it's just kind of matter-of-factly written in there, but the attitudes and what the police are actually doing to people who commit the unforgivable sin of going outside. Not kidding.
There's little sympathy for anyone ignoring the health orders, even this group of teenagers caught partying after dark at the bottom of the North Bondi Cliffs. Herded to higher ground by Polair's spotlight and speaker, the eight boys were placed in handcuffs and left to explain a $1,000 fine to mum.
681 penalty infringement notices issued in the last 24 hours. More than 400 of those notices were again for people being outside of their home without a reasonable excuse.
People being fined $1,000 Australian, which is, I think it's close to $700, something like that. I don't know what the latest exchange rate is. For being outside of their home and not close to their home, outside of the area where they are allowed to go. You're allowed to, I believe it is, to go 5 miles. There's a 5 mile radius around certain, I mean, if you don't live within 5 miles of a grocery store, obviously you can go there. But they have certain regions where you're assigned. This is your grocery store. Maybe you're lucky enough to live someplace where there are two or three grocery stores within the bubble the government has artificially created for you. And if you go outside of there without a good reason, and what constitutes a good reason is, you guessed it, determined by the government. Doesn't matter what your circumstances are. You could have been sitting in your basement for a month, a solid month, breathing only prepackaged oxygen out of a scuba tank, and you want to go over to your significant other's house across town, who's been doing the exact same thing. You haven't seen, you haven't even licked so much as a stamp. You haven't left the house. I mean, you're not allowed to do that. The government will fine you for that. So while they speak English up there, or some variation of it, how about that pronunciation of the word police? Some variation of it. They are nothing like us. There is no country like us. That is why every affront to our liberty needs to be opposed vehemently, because Australia a few years ago, about 10 years ago, they had their equivalent of the Second Amendment. They had their guns stripped from them by their government. They were bought back by the government, even though they weren't sold by the government. So the people have no rights and no way to defend themselves against anything, really. Scary, scary stuff. Holy Frank Tanana, look at the time. It's time to call it a day, ladies and gentlemen. But fear not. Tomorrow is another one of these 24-hour periods we have imposed on it, the term day. We don't know. We don't know what a day's pronouns are. We don't know how a day identifies. We don't even know if it's a day, but we'll be here to mark it in any event, so fear not. I appreciate you listening. Hopefully you had some food for thought today. You don't go away malnourished on that front. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Have a great one.